Hi, everybody. I'm going to sit down because I'm like a giraffe, really tall. So I'm going to read a couple new poems. I'm going to read some poems from my chapbook as well. A friend of mine just got back from Louisiana, and I was in the process of looking up a video on the internet, and I came across this interview of this woman from – she was a survivor of Hurricane Katrina, and was just very moved to write this poem, and also the fact that my friend coming back from Louisiana really struck a chord with me and thinking about this even more. So this poem is called Spared. It's for New Orleans. On Channel 2, the mother of three from New Orleans who lost everything is grateful. She stands on her living room wall, face down in August mud, a microphone thrust in her face. At least I didn't lose my babies. Does she know if she does not ask for help now, she'll never get it? Swamp water folk like her who have survived without nightlights or GEDs. Channel 2's cameras aren't designed for anything cinematic. They only capture her clapboard house like an afterthought, set afloat the muddy Mississippi. She doesn't know what to say. She doesn't know each woman caught staring out of a broken window deserves an Emmy. Each plexiglass frown through a scotch tape horizon must be scored to a white man's violin. The people who have died will not be called by name. They will be calculated in apathetic white block lettering, ghosts invisible to the naked eye in bipartisan America. The nameless mother of three does not know any of this. She looks at her daughter standing in shock. She is half star child, half wounded warrior, a pick-up-the-pieces girl and hand-me-downs. Her eyes are zoom lenses snap-shooting everything. The picture frames in wet soil, a pet's bowl tossed over the hill. She holds this pose long enough for this poem to be written. Is she silent because she is not able to read the instructions on the food packs left behind by disaster relief? Does she know how to make jambalaya, etouffee, if her mother is too sick to care? Or how to live in a place where survival is more important than hope? The daughter doesn't answer any of their questions. She walks away on two graveyard song legs across the white beach parchment of this story, to be counted among the fortunate, spared death for this. This next poem kind of has a, well, doesn't kind of, has a long title. Reading in between the lines of an email to the Laurel Garden Apartments on trying to get my security deposit back. I want you to know I've cleaned everything. The walls are how I found them. I've documented the nicks in the plaster, the place where the previous tenant threw a chair at his wife's head. I've shampooed the carpet the best I could. Left traffic patterns I couldn't do anything with. Crushed piles worn into the path my mother walked from the sink to the porta potty after surgery. And I'm sorry, the screen left marks. We kept it there for her privacy. It had a Chinese silk painting on the front and heavy legs which leave marks in the carpet wherever it's placed. There's still a faint smell of smoke on the walls, and I'm sorry. This was from my father, who visited once, 20 years after he died. Blew smoke over my shoulder and disappeared like a prayer, a litany of Surgeon General warnings whispering below the threshold of hearing. I want you to know I have taken everything out. The sofa where my niece sat crying after her breakup. The kitchen table where I sat talking her down from the ledge over the phone till 9 a.m. the next day, holding the receiver while she slept. As long as I could hear her breathing, I knew she was okay. I waited until the sun rose like the bruises that appeared on her right shoulder and face. Everything's been emptied out. I'm asking you if it's okay. If you've seen it yet, tell me I haven't left anything behind. Thanks. Thank you. This next poem is called Cowboy. My father wanted to be a cowboy, never was. He kept Cadillacs instead of Arabians, changed brake pads instead of saddles. His horses kept quiet under cherry red hoods, cars that purred like cats going 0 to 60 in seconds. He smiles like a ghost from the 1950s, striped shirt, one hand on a painted mare, his arm cropped in the shot. I want to think it was just physical, that need to feel something muscular, a back bending into speed between your legs, no tree or wind around that could know what would happen. Everyone gone from the house, I would practice being a man for hours, slipping on those stiff western shirts with the snap buttons, lift up his black brimmed Stetson smelling of a man's sweats and polo cologne. In his room, the wafts of Marlboro's smoke lingering like low-hung Texas clouds. Tomorrow, I'll stand in a hospital doorway and watch them force the breathing tube down his throat. And later, wide stance a chair by his bed and hold that John Wayne silence like a handshake, locking his steel blue eyes with mine. Watch the morphine enter his body through the clear tube like water entering a stream in a Western movie at the moment they discover gold. Peace flooding his bloodstream like a painted sunset in a Hollywood movie set. I would be strong, draw a gun if it was called for, pull the trigger, filling the man in black with hot lead, dropping him on ghost town gravel instead of this hospital bed. The actor getting up after the credits roll past his body when a screen gets dark and we can't see him anymore. Only names moving past of people, who they were, who they pretended to be. I worked in construction for a number of years, and this poem is about my first, and I felt like it was going to be my last day on the job. And this is called About Men Who Lie to Other Men for No Reason and What It Means. Sometimes it's the minutes before doing the thing, then the thing itself. I sat in the driver's seat, engine off, not touching anything. When there is an electrical storm, sometimes the safest place is inside. I listened to music, Bach, I think, and I ate a croissant, while men gathered already in the blue denim morning, full of coffee and rough talk. Men of the steel toe and rolled up cuff, men who say fuck to everything, wear hard hats, grab their balls, spit tobacco at your feet. And something about how you lied to them at break when everyone was talking about kids and yours, and you said that yours was too but full of problems, needs special care. And even if it was a lie, you loved how that silence spread across the roof on your first day atop a four-story building. You won't last here, says the man who stands too close to you. Hold your breath for a moment, then laughs. So I have a chapbook called A Room Full of Trees. I'm going to read a couple poems from it and be happy to sign a copy for you if you're so inclined. So this first poem I'm going to read is called The Way Back. One, somewhere there's a way back in through a word like recollect or lattice. Somewhere the way through is the path to her house, where your feet disappear in the mud-sucked earth, the place where ground turns to water, call it a river. You were young. Two, the way grass has grown high, the way ash from the fire nurtures soil. Three, today I am on the hill where her house was. I draw the floor plan in the air with my finger, and the white door swings open. The room opening to waves, deep swirls of brown paneling rippled and pulled from the wall because of the heat. The ceiling's cumulus plaster crackling, her big house settling. The built-ins still packed with porcelain ducks and singing angels. And I'm trying to remember that wall where her daughter on a Saturday. It was raining and her friends had dates. My mother, listening to jazz in high school, took her brushes, never painted before. But suddenly, the wall was filled with hemlocks, and deer drank from streams. Walking out of the wall, down the street past me, and somewhere past me there was water, a stream. Somewhere there was a way back in. Her kitchen windows steaming from heat. A blurry view of the Allegheny. The gray barges like grave markers pulling steel. Her mother at the stove, back turned, disappearing into the mist. 4. I'm downstairs when the last of her things are boxed up. In the photograph I asked to keep, nothing moves. It is 1933 and she is standing in a bread line. It could have been minutes or hours. No one owns a watch. Time is the length of space between each of her footsteps, the time it takes to get inside before they run out. And I'm trying to remember that last time I touched her. I hold the photograph up to the light. My thumb touches her face, but she doesn't notice. The distance is clear, but no one can see past it. 5. The way a door shuts on its own. The way the wind lets go of my hand. 6. When I stepped back outside and the house disappeared. 7. In a room she won't remember, I sit on the edge of her bed. We are somewhere and the light is coming through the open blinds, the thin slats splintering the air. And I wait until you open your eyes to tell you it is morning. And this last poem I'm going to read from the chapbook is called Sonata for a Tree in Winter. No one spoke about the water or that slight metallic taste in our mouths when we drank it. And I only knew years later, still searching, what was the word for this? What? The lone tree in our backyard stood like my mother, frozen in the alcove, trying to remember what she was doing there. This time of year, there really is no color in anything. Grass, the color of ash. The leaves are spidery riverbeds, or the undersides of her hands dried up like a broken mask. Outside, the rustle of old newspapers holds the lists of things, the names of people who will not stay inside her head. And nothing can be said about the sun, except from the 24th floor, it's as white as the neon lights they move over her body in an exam room in December. I wait with her, ask again about the doctor. What was the piece of music you played for me before, she asks. Her hand holds an invisible violin. She closes her eyes, scrapes the bow across the air. Thanks. Thank you. And my last poem, I was really happy to learn that it was recently published and accepted in Heart Online. And I was watching I watched a documentary on the sex trafficking that was going on in Malaysia, and was really horrified at this. And some poems you wish you didn't have to write. And I know most of you are poets, and you feel from time to time that there are things in this world that have to be spoken about. And this is one of them for me. And I was really honored to have it accepted. So this poem is called Little Fish, and it has a epigraph. In Malaysia, if you cut it up small enough, you can feed a family of 5 on one small fish. Little fish swim in moss-sown nets, trapped, multiply, swim as far as the hash mark, crackers crushed in the hand, dropped on the water's surface, breathe underwater, come up for air, and die. Most girls start at 8, begin by sweating at daybreak, parents in over their head, sell their daughters, tie the line, drop it down, learn the art of disappearance into murky water, breathe it in, learn to swallow blackness dark enough to hold back regret or the sun in a Sekachan fishing village. Little fish multiply so quickly, prized for their scales, the glitter of their backs. Become 8, become 10 again, or 11. Follow 35-year-old men into hospitals where doctors test your blood, sign your virgin papers. An 8-year-old girl is worth 1,500 American, a 10, only 800. Little fish wait in dark rooms and cry into crushing pressure. Swim into dark ropes, small enough to see the way out, but too weak to find it. Little fish stay in hotel rooms, breathe into the no air of men's breath, stare upwards at wallpaper border made out of sailboats, bleed on bedsheets and stare out at windows. Little fish run away, some cut free from the nets, drift into freefall or lost into currents, where mother's tear salt mixes into ocean, becomes indistinguishable. Little fish learn to hold their breath like a razor blade under the tongue, stay still as a rock under the shadow play of water. The "I'll never do that again" hands that reach for your slippery gills. She'll hold a knife and lift you out into the light, still moving. Glide that blade down your belly evenly. Make sure there's enough for everyone.
Thank you.